everybody, and welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. So, it is currently 11:41 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday, October 16th, 2001. At this time tomorrow evening, or whenever you hear this, because I don't know when you listen to the podcast of your choosing, we will be in New York City preparing to do 6 shows in 4 days at Hostley International, The Way Behind, and Pete's Candy Store, the talk show being the show. So we're going to New York for CMJ. We're not on any CMJ showcase particularly, but that doesn't really matter because it's New York and who cares? It's going to be fun. We're going to have fun. Peter and I, producer of the show, will be heading up tomorrow evening. Esmeralda, co-host of the show, will be headed up on Tuesday evening. If you're in New York on Tuesday and nothing to do, when I say New York, I mean the city. I'm sorry, upstate New York, but really, you have to kind of be used to this now. And it's like when people say, I'm going to Chicago, they probably mean Chicago and the 50 miles around it, not so much like Schaumburg. You don't say, I'm going to Schaumburg. No one really wants to go to Schaumburg. And this is nothing against Schaumburg. I'm sure it's a very fine place. I just don't spend a lot of time in Schaumburg, and I highly doubt that the people in Schaumburg that end up moving to Chicago's city limits go back a lot. Anyways, that's not the point. The point is not Schaumburg. I think that's never been uttered before. Anyways, that's a first. We're going to be doing 6 shows... 3 venues, 4 days. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. Our main venue, where we're staying, is Hosteling International. It's on the Upper West Side in Manhattan. It's the first time we're going to be doing shows in Manhattan proper. We've done one hostel show before. It was both awkward and amazing. Here's the thing about the hostel show. I have no idea what to expect. In D.C., the hostel show is made up of maybe 70%. No, that's not right. 50% of people in the hostel, 50% of the people came to see the proper show. It was amazing. We had a great lineup. We had Haywood Turnipseed Jr. If you listen to the show, you know who Haywood is. If this is your first time, let me explain. Haywood is an African-American comedian. The race in this definitely matters. He's an African-American comedian in D.C., mid-30s, early-30s, something like that. Brilliant, very approachable dude. Doesn't do too much heady stuff, but doesn't do anything really stereotypical. The only thing you could say that Haywood does that's stereotypical is weed humor. He likes his weed humor. And that's kind of how I know him. Haywood's done the show before. He's done the show at the Looking Glass Lounge when he first started in D.C. I saw Haywood at an open mic. He was the only one that actually stood out. He has a unique perspective, and he's amazing. So when I knew I had this hostel show coming up, I was like, okay, listen, I'm going to book Haywood because he is the best. And when I said, listen, I'm talking to only myself. I said, listen, Brandon, stop talking to yourself in this way because you're not a senator. I added a syllable to senator. Anyways, ask Haywood. Haywood's super friendly, super family friendly. This is very important to the story. Haywood decides to come and do the show, a completely new set, completely new material. He's supposed to do 8 minutes to 16 minutes. And here's how race matters. We're at the hostel. International crowd. International is in the name of the hostel. Haywood refers to Hitler as your guy Hitler to a bunch of European tourists. This doesn't go over well. That's why it was amazing slash awkward. This time, it will not go that way. It's going to be fun. It's going to be very fun. It's going to be very loose. I'm not trying to censor comedians. I'm just saying, please, if we have some German tourists in the crowd, don't say Hitler is your guy. That's all. Simple thing. Not a big deal. Anyways, Haywood proceeded to hit on everyone in the crowd, which was fantastic. It was a joke. He's a married man. He's a delightful man. He's a new baby. There's nothing serious about this. Anyways, I don't know why I'm talking about this. Anyways, that's why the show is so fascinating to me, because I have no idea what to expect. We have absolutely fantastic guests for each of the show. I'm going to go through all the shows at Hostel International with you. This is actually going to be a shorter show. We only have 2 segments today in addition to this little whatever you want to call it, because of all the shows that are coming up this week. So this is kind of a preview of the October 16th week. On October 19th, Wednesday, our first show at Hostel International at 891 Amsterdam Avenue, in the Upper West Side of New York. We're going to see people at 7 p.m. The talk show starts at 7:30. This is an all-ages show. There's no cover. And here's the kicker. I'm 99% sure we have free Brooklyn beer. They told me it's free Brooklyn Brewery, and I don't believe it because that's too good to be true, so I'm just saying 99%. We have Seth Herzog, who produces this amazing talk show in New York. The New York Times wrote about it. Not talk show, I'm sorry. Variety show in New York. The New York Times wrote about him a few months ago. Check it out. Stand-up comedian Carmen Lynch, who is fantastic, and a special set from Ben Lear. Okay, so that's October 19th at the hostel. October 20th at the hostel. We have Brian Moreland from Gawker. You know what Gawker is if you're listening to a podcast. There's no way you don't know what Gawker is. Brian and I were on the same show a few weeks ago in New York City. It devolved with me asking him if he's ever been happy in his life, and it's an interesting pairing. On paper, Brian and I do not get along, but I think in reality, we're going to be fast friends. If this is the kind of relationship where we're 10 or 11, we might have had a sleepover. So it's going to be fun and definitely confrontational in a good, fun, confrontational way. Brian could definitely hold his own. I'm excited to talk to him. Stand-up comedian that night is Lauren Vino. Lauren is a Chicago comedian who has just moved, I think like today, to New York City, and I've wanted her to have her on the live show forever, so this really worked out, and a special set from Mindy Raff. Mindy is also a comedian, so it will be a very lighthearted, fun, sexy gay show. Brian's gay, talks about it, it's okay for me to say that. Fun show. Okay, so October 21st, Greg Wallach's going to be there. Greg is a storyteller, and he's absolutely fascinating because, he's a storyteller and it doesn't suck, and that's very hard to come by. No offense, storytellers. If I know you and I talk to you to your face, I probably enjoy your stuff. I'm just leaving it at that for the rest. I don't know you, but I've seen a lot of really bad stuff. Anyways, Greg is good. I've seen Greg before. He's very good. Stand-up comedian Jay Welch, who is a pick from Peter, and I'm excited to see Jay. I haven't seen Jay yet. And a special set from Aaron Thompson, super friend of the show. He did this show with the guys from All Songs Considered a few weeks ago at the Wonderland Ballroom. It was such a success. I'm so happy to have Aaron back. Aaron is a former DCEN, current New Jerseyan, and we're going to be with him hanging out on October 21st. And I'm pretty sure Nathan Jurgensen, who's coming up later in the show, will be playing drums for Aaron that night. So it's going to be a very, very, very good thing. October 22nd, our last night, Saturday night at Hostel International. We have Ben Kissel, who's a podcaster and all-around talented man, stand-up comedian Ryan Connor, and a special set from Larkin Grimm, a band I've been trying to get on the show for about 6 months. Those are all the Hostel International shows. Once again, all of those shows begin at 7:30, seating at 7 p.m. Come early, there is free beer, and I am not joking. Okay, so those are the shows that we need to go really well so we can take this thing on the road. That's why we're doing it at the Hostel. It's hard to explain to people that haven't been to a hostel. Hell, it's hard to explain to people that have been to a hostel why I want to do this show in a hostel. The people that work at these hostels are extremely kind and nice and open to, they kind of have to be, to everyone. And I have no idea who's going to be in the crowd. It's kind of like if you're going to just blanket ticket an immigration rally. You have no idea who's going to be there or why they're there, but it's definitely fascinating. But we're not going to just stay in the hostel. Let's be honest, some people don't want to go to the Upper West Side of Manhattan. It's a very expensive area. It's not where a lot of people our age, when I say our age, I mean like, I don't know, 20 to 40 go. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, unless you're rich, you probably don't live there. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I don't know where you live, listener, dear. You could live in Oklahoma. There's nothing wrong with Oklahoma. In fact, I'd like to visit. Send me a letter if you'd like me to go to Oklahoma. Now I will take a sip from a glass. Okay. We're doing two late night shows out in Brooklyn. The first one, this Wednesday, October 19th, we will be at the Way Station. I think it's in Prospect Heights in Brooklyn. It's 683 Washington Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. By the way, all this information is at youmeetthemeverybody.com, so it's all there. Don't worry. I'm sure you were very worried before. You can possibly find it. This show, in terms of talent, is insane. It's one of these shows where 6 months, a year from now, when people go, oh, you got good guests in New York, these will be the shows they're talking about. No offense to the Hostel International shows, just let me explain. The October 19th show at the Way Station, 11 p.m., we have Michael Cooperman, who is a graphic novelist, cartoonist of sorts. He's Conan O'Brien, giant fan. Recently at the Comic-Con this weekend in New York City. Mark Twain, look it up. It's amazing. Comedian James Adomian. If you're a fan of Comedy Bang Bang, Comedy Death Ray, James Adomian is that guy that you've laughed at and didn't know who it was because he was playing a character. He's amazing. He will be there unless he is currently being arrested at Occupy Wall Street. We'll find out soon. And a special set from Jenna Nichols. That is 11 p.m. on Wednesday, October 19th at the Way Station. Why do I keep saying the Way Station? Why am I doing a show at the Way Station? The Way Station. The Way Station has a TARDIS, ladies and gentlemen. I have been obsessed with Doctor Who in the past 6 months, thanks to my best friend Max and his lovely lady, Stacy. And because of this, I am now obsessed, and I had to do a show where they have a TARDIS as the bathroom. Here's a little thing you need to know. I visited this place about 2 weeks ago, dropping off some promotional materials. It is literally bigger on the inside. The TARDIS is bigger on the inside, ladies and gentlemen. Please come to the Way Station, 683 Washington Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11 p.m. this Wednesday. I will be doing a show maybe 15 feet from a TARDIS, and I will be wearing my most Doctor Who-like suit. It's depressing. I've already packed my bags to make it the most Doctor Who. I've written an entire monologue about Doctor Who. If you don't like Doctor Who, I apologize in advance. This is not the show for you. If you don't like Doctor Who, when you don't like the Upper West Side, the show for you is at Pete's Candy Store. Yes, we're going back to Pete's. We're going back to Williamsburg where all the hipsters live and die. That's going to be Saturday, October 22nd. Technically, October 23rd because we're starting a little bit after midnight. So it's October 22nd, that's Saturday night, last night at CMJ. Like, it matters. Who the fuck cares? It's going to be fun. That's all that matters. This is kind of a very good way to end our week because veteran of the show. She did the show once, like 2 years ago. Cameron Esposito is our guest that night. Do you know Cameron? How could you possibly respond to me? That's insane. Cameron has done the show before. She's a brilliant stand-up comedian in Chicago, and she's getting crazy amounts of blog buzz. And I say blog buzz because stand-up comedy doesn't really get blog buzz, and she's getting it, so that's kind of awesome. My fiance asked me, like, where does Cameron live anymore? I'm like, I have no idea. She's always traveling. Why am I shocked like a Jewish mother? Anyways, Cameron Esposito is our guest, stand-up comedian. Sean Patton will be doing stand-up. Sean is someone I want to have on the show because Recom is a great comedy magazine. Stick with me here, folks. Recom magazine is ran by Christy, who I love. She's episode 100. If you've never heard of Christy, you need to find out. She's a current LA resident, former Chicago resident. She launched this magazine about a year ago called Recomedy. And it's about all these awesome comedians that aren't really, you know, mainstream. And Sean was on the cover of the first episode, the first issue. So I'm very, very excited to see Sean. And a special set from Robin Bashir. I don't know how to say Robin's name properly. Because I don't know how to say Robin's name properly, Robin's music will be the beds between me and the next segment and the segment after that and then the closing segment. So that's our next six shows in 4 days, all of which are in Manhattan and or Brooklyn, and they're going to be a lot of fun, and I'm very much looking forward to this. We also have some special stuff set aside that aren't live shows that I don't want to talk about yet because I'm afraid they're going to fall through because the guests are so awesome. I don't want to, you know, say like, oh, I'm going to be on this, and then it doesn't happen. You know, it's one of those type of things. So if you're friends with me, hell, if you're not friends with me, find me in New York. Let's hang out. I'm going to be there as of 24 hours from now. So probably by the time you're listening to this, I'm either on my way or in New York City, hanging out for the week, doing a lot of shows, covering as many DC bands at CMJ for the Washington City paper, writing very snipey comments for Brightest Young Things, and generally trying to live a life where I don't have a weird, crazy midlife crisis / get a job doing this full time. So if any of you know anything, the thing. That makes no sense. These are going to be fun shows. But the show you're listening to right now, you've made it. Thank you so much. It's actually not funny. I mean, it could be funny, but it's actually not funny. Nathan Jorgensen and I sat down and talked about the role of social media in the current state of world politics. And Nathan is a PhD candidate about sociology, specifically about social media. And he's also one of my favorite people, and he is one of these people that will not talk down to you, but kind of explain everything, and then you'll step back from it and realize, wow, I really knew nothing, and he could have just said, shut the fuck up and let me explain to you, but instead he let you say your two cents, and then you realized, oh, I'm totally off on this. That's the kind of guy Nathan is, and that's why I like talking to him. And then the third part of the show is with Sean Gray. Sean Gray had a Fan Death Records, one of the best record labels in the country of America. When I say America, I mean the United States of America. I apologize to Latin America. I always wondered if that was offensive. Probably not. Anyways, Sean and I talk about the upcoming Lou Reed Metallica collaboration, and we have some surprising results, and then you'll hear from me again. So without further ado, here is the rest of the show, and Robin Bachier? We'll find out on Saturday night. Robin Bachier, everybody.
Lost little right, so I'm with Nathan, and Nathan and I are in... Well, Nathan, tell the people who you are. Don't drink your coffee.
I'm a graduate student at University of Maryland in sociology, writing a dissertation. That's me.
All right, what is your specialty? Like, what are you focusing on?
I do social theory, so but mostly it's as it relates to social media and the internet, technology, et cetera. So with theoretical takes on it.
So we're going to be talking about your recent article that has a lot of comments on it on the internet about how the... well, you tell us about it.
The one I posted this weekend?
Yes.
Okay, well, I
have... The one that we just talked about.
I think the title was something like Noam Chomsky Getting Social Media...
Oh, we weren't going to talk about that. Let's talk about Noam Chomsky first.
That was the one that got the comments.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about Noam Chomsky first. Sorry.
Oh, I mean, do you want to?
We can do it quickly.
Oh, okay. I had just written an article. I just said Noam Chomsky is getting social media all wrong. It really wasn't even an article. It was I had read this interview. Noam Chomsky was with a DC scene website called Brightest Young Things. And it's pictures of like kids partying and stuff like that. And then ironically, they go and they interview Noam Chomsky, and Chomsky pontificates about many things. And he starts talking about Twitter and texting. And it just... He doesn't use it. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and he gets it really, really wrong. And so I railed off a series of tweets saying that he's getting this wrong, and it's part of this larger trend. He basically said that Twitter and texting, all that is shallow communication. It's trivial. It's shallow. And I think that that's a very problematic viewpoint that a lot of, you know, people that don't use social media, established intellectuals, tend to have. And it's belittling to, I think, groups of people. It's a specific type of knowledge, and you're belittling that type of knowledge. And I just called that out to be, it's a claim about power. It's making yourself more powerful than these other people. You know, you're deep, they're shallow. And I just called them out in a series of tweets, and then I wrote a little post about it, and a whole bunch of Noam Chomsky defenders. And I like Noam Chomsky, but a whole lot of his defenders, you know, how dare you criticize him? I've criticized other intellectuals for saying the same thing, but, you know, so it was a bunch of comments back and forth, people defending Noam Chomsky, but people got my back, too, and it was a good debate.
All right, and the reason why I wanted to talk about that first is because you wrote an article the week before about how revolutions right now are being documented because of social media, and it's the first time, and it was a prime for that. Is that correct?
What I was thinking about was, I guess my argument is, and I think it's a fear that a lot of people have, is that we're living in this time when it seems like at any given moment, a whole bunch of people, probably kids, armed with cell phones in their pockets, are just magically converging at the same time and you know, fucking shit up, like changing the rules of social behavior, social norms, the normal functioning of society being changed. And you know, for example, obviously the biggest example, the Arab Spring, mm-hmm. the revolution in the Middle East, North Africa, and now, you know, potentially in the Americas and in Asia. And, you know, people have talked about them being Twitter revolutions and Facebook revolutions. I don't like those terms. We could talk about that. But then we see the same thing about the riots immediately in UK. David Cameron said, you know, blame those on Twitter, which wasn't the case. And, you know, people talk about flash mobs and these kids getting together and, you know, all getting together and robbing a store at the same time, or the flash mobs that turned into race riots in Philly, to the Occupy protests when there's people like, just it seems like everywhere we turn, every week there's some new example of kids all getting together armed with social media or texting or whatever people want to be, you know, are scared about, and they're getting together and they're changing the normal operation of society. There's this atmosphere that this it could just happen at any moment, and I think a lot of people are terrified of that, and other people are thrilled about that. There's great potential and there's also great fear, you know.
Well, the articles also talked about the Occupy Wall Street movement and all that stuff. The 99%.
I didn't talk about the 99%, but you're laughing. It sounds like you want to talk about the 99%.
We don't have to talk about that.
We can talk about the 99%.
Do you think any of this social media is helping, or it would have happened anyways, or do you think it's just it's a tool? What's the point of it? How does it matter?
And you're referring to the Occupy protests or the Arab Spring or all the above?
All the above. I think for the Arab Spring, tell me if I'm completely wrong here, you've studied it, it just sped things along. It sped up the inevitable. Am I am I totally off on this?
That's a debate. I mean, so Mubarak was in power for, you know, more than three decades. Mm-hmm. People have been trying to do this for decades. And you know, just all these regimes that have been around for many decades are dropping. And, you know, I wonder, is it just a grand coincidence that the rise of social media, I think, will historically be coupled with the fall of dictators, of this global sort of, you know, explosion of protest and riots and social movements and gatherings and uprisings and mobs and all of this? You know, is it just grand coincidence that all this stuff is happening at the same time that social media has become very popular? You know, I think Malcolm Gladwell was really outspoken in saying, you know, outliers and, you know, sort of, he was really a vocal saying that, no, there was protest before social media, therefore social media doesn't have any impact on protest. And it was a very silly sort of an argument. I think we can, I think really good arguments to be made that protest is a little bit different with social media. I think one of the main points is what you mentioned, it being faster. The way that these protests, you know, especially in North Africa and the Middle East, are, you know, the rapid fire, the regimes are falling fast, the uprisings are moving to other countries very quickly. The speed is definitely one of the different characteristics. And one of the other characteristics I talked about in that last article was, I guess it's the feeling, if you go, you know, if wherever you're listening to this, if there's an Occupy movement in your town, go into that area and think about what it's like to protest with and without a smartphone in your pocket.
Why should people be thinking that?
Just do that as a thought experiment. Just think about that. You don't have a smartphone in your pocket. What's the best thing you can do? You can hold a sign, you can chance, you know, maybe you hope for a news camera to be, you know, pointed at you. But you're shouting sort of into the wind. And that's one of the hardest parts about protests is everybody has to, like, tell each other that that what we're doing matters.
So you think social media makes everyone that's participating feel validated?
I think it allows them to participate more. Of course, everybody in any protest is participating in some way. You're there, you're occupying space. But you can participate far more. When you have a smartphone in your pocket, now you're taking a picture. You're taking photos of police brutality. You're taking photos of the crowd. You're going on Twitter and you're saying your opinion with a hashtag on it, and journalists are covering that. And now you have all these different things that you can do, and you can join Facebook groups. It's all these different things that you can do to now become more of a participatory experience. Now, if you feel like your voice matters, and I think that's one of the reasons why the rise of social media is being coupled with this rise of protest and revolution, is because now we really do feel like we have a voice.
So we feel like we have a voice, but does it actually matter? Do you think that any of the social media stuff is actually helping, or is it just sort of making the people participating feel better about themselves?
Well, I think it absolutely mattered. In Egypt, you know, it's pretty well documented, the organizing that happened online, and that online organizing, they were very clear on saying, this is how we need to behave offline. All the online organizing was saying, this is where we need to meet, this is what you do when a tear gas canister is thrown at you, this is how we're going to move, if the cops come here, you're going to do that. So, you know, when I'm talking about the way social media was used, it's not only social media. Some of the people, you know, calling it Twitter revolution is reductionist because it's also physical space. They took physical space and the digital.
You mean both?
Always both. That's why social media is slightly different than the internet and technology. One of the things that social media does is it unites the online and offline. I don't see social media as just this online space, like going on the Matrix or something like that. It's instead that space in between the online and offline. It's united the online and offline. And we all know that when anybody uses Facebook, you know, Facebook is really a collection of people you know offline. You talk about things on Facebook you did offline. Then offline, when you're not logged in, you talk about stuff that was going on Facebook. It's this back and forth, constant back and forth. We can't think of the digital and physical spheres as separate, but rather always enmeshed. Always, you know, I think of our reality as augmented. Of atoms and bits. That's our augmented reality, and these are augmented protests. We can pull example after example of the way the movement in Egypt used the online and the offline, both, always thinking of both. The Occupy protests, you know, think about the name, hashtag Occupy, hashtag online, Occupy. They're not occupying physical space, right? Occupy literally means take up physical space with bodies. Right, but always aware of, you know, it's organized by Adbusters online, and then joined by Anonymous, an online hacker group, and you know the whole thing is very much an eye to the online, but fundamentally it's about occupying physical space. So it's both. It's that they integrated both. Social media allows you to use both the online and the offline, and I think that's the power of social media, and that's why we're seeing so many protests today. That's why we have this, you know, I call this atmosphere of revolution or atmosphere of protest, of mobs, of riots, because social media is effectively uniting the online and offline.
Where can people follow you?
My website is NathanJurgensen.com, NathanJurgensen.com. I also blog on my blog called Cyborgology, CYBORGOLOGY.
And your Twitter.
And my Twitter is my name, at Nathan Jurgensen.
Sean, you wanted to talk about the Metallica Lou Reed collaboration.
Yeah, well, it's funny. We were eating lunch trying to figure out what we should talk about. And so we had decided, I'd mentioned to you, like, hey, have you heard that Metallica Lou Reed?
Yeah.
You had heard of it, but you didn't.
Yeah.
I'm surprised your finger wasn't on the pulse.
It wasn't. I'm waiting for the 84 Minutes of Joy to come out this Halloween.
Well, so the single, which is called The View, just came out this past week.
It's called The View?
It's called The View.
Oh, that's the best.
So, you know, and you have to realize something. When you first hear about this collab,
it's hilarious.
It's not only is it hilarious, but it's weird. I think it's more weird than it is hilarious.
Didn't Metallica and DMX collaborate on the Too Fast, Too Furious soundtrack or something like that?
I have no idea. Okay. Actually, we'll get into this later, but there was, remember the, I think it was Night of the, some horror film where it was like Sonic Youth collab with Cypress Hill.
Yeah, I remember that. There was the Spawn soundtrack also.
Yeah, maybe
that.
It was something, some, there was like, but it was, the whole soundtrack was collabs.
But that was like that was hip-hop meets rock and roll. Like,
so, well, yeah, what? Yeah, but I mean, like, it still was, who would have thought Cypress Hill would collab with Sonic Youth? Anyways.
Drugs? Everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Lollapalooza thought that.
But here's the thing. So, we had listened to it.
Yes.
And everybody, before we had listened to it, I told you, and you probably assumed that everybody thought it was shitty. And you probably had lowered your expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was, you kind of knew what you might be getting into,
yeah,
which was a shit show. But you actually listened to it, and I don't believe it's lowered expectations.
No!
It's actually a legit song.
Yeah, and it's, I think, an equal parts collaboration, at least from the first song we've heard.
Yeah, I mean, I can't judge the rest of the album, but as we were saying, I can't imagine it being any, it doesn't really diverge, I think, much. I can't imagine doing, like, a drum and bass.
No.
You know, like, it's going to be, like, Metallica meets...
There's no mandolin on this
record. Yeah. So I don't think that there's going to be any weird deviations between what we just heard.
But what we heard, it's good.
It's good.
It sounds like really good Metallica instrumentals.
Yeah.
No. With Lou Reed talk reading poetry.
Which is what he does.
And that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's, it's really bad when James sings. But it's not like James has ever been known. Why am I saying James like we're friends? Yeah. Like, me and James go back, we like to hot rod it up and down the coast. James is an awful singer, but lyrically, not nearly as bad as their last five records. It's laughable.
Yeah.
But for a Metallica song, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. So, you start the song off. Let's describe the song first, which I'm assuming you'll play this song.
I'll play a bit of it now.
Yeah,
I'll just pull it up. You keep talking. You talk over it. Is that okay?
Yeah. I don't know if we'll be able to hear.
Oh, I'll turn it up. There we go.
Yeah.
You can keep talking.
Pulled up on the YouTube.
No, it's not.
No, I have tabs.
No, we were watching Tim Tebow.
Oh, yeah. We were watching Tim Tebow.
Sorry, out there. Out there? Just keep talking.
All right. So, as he's pulling that up. Anyways, the song starts with just a regular, it doesn't even start with a metal drum beat. It's just very, almost 4/4 kind of, like not even, you're going to hear it. It's,
so the video is the official one. It's about this thing, Lou, it's a 100-year-old play. Lou Reed's been wanting to work on this thing forever. They met at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, and now we get Lars and Lou Reed in the exact same room, and that alone is worth it. I am a corpse.
smother there for a second. Pause it there for a second. Now, you just heard, like, the first, I don't know, like...
Minute and 10 seconds.
Maybe not even that, it's because the first part of
it.
So, you just heard that first, like, 40 seconds, let's say. If I didn't tell you that was Metallica in the background, you would be like, oh, it's Lou Reed doing some weird fucking metal. You wouldn't even have the preconceived notion of it being, like, shitty, because you might think it's shitty, but it wouldn't be shitty for the reasons that Metallica's involved.
Yeah, I don't think it's... it's not shitty to me.
It's not shitty, no.
It's... I actually do like what he's doing with his vocal pattern, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's not boring, and for poetry, that's important. Not boring. There's some decent imagery. I can't believe I'm defending Lou Reed Metallica right now. And like you were saying, it's all about name recognition. I personally think if you pass this off as a Vic Chestnut Mastodon collaboration, internet would love it.
People would be like, even if they didn't love it, they'd be like, That's interesting.
It's a divergence. It's amazing. It's brilliant.
Whereas with this, it's kind of like, okay. And I understand that. I can understand that preconceived notion of being like, what the, or like just laughing at it completely. But yeah, you have to kind of remove yourself from that to really. And again, I also can't believe I'm defending this.
Yeah.
But if you really kind of remove yourself from that kind of knowledge of it being Metallica and just leave it as Lou Reed, you would kind of be like, this is awesome.
Yeah, and also, how many people are going to actually go and buy this? 14-year-old Metallica fans and like 8 Lou Reed fans. That's it. No diehard metalhead's going to buy this, and no diehard Lou Reed fan's going to like it. But there's going to be a lot of 14, 15-year-old kids who have never heard of Lou Reed before who are now going to get turned on to all this cool, not Metallica-like music, and that's also a good thing.
Yeah. And, I don't think it's going to sell well at all, but...
No, it's going to bomb! But I bet it wins a bunch of Grammys.
I don't know, maybe it will.
I think it's going to win a bunch of Grammys.
It's tough to really see what the mainstream critics are going to say, because I know...
Who cares? The Grammys aren't about critics.
No, I know that, but I think... I don't know. I don't know if it'll win Grammys.
I'll bet you $5 on this podcast now that this one's at least one Grammy.
We can't say, like, packaging, though. It has to be, like, something.
It has to be music-related. Actually, no, it can be packaging, because this packaging looks interesting. Give me the packaging one, too. Come on. $5.
All right, okay.
We're shaking it. All right, good. $5. I don't think it's going to, like, do gangbusters. It's not going to win Album of the Year, but it will definitely be nominated for Metal Album of the Year. It might win for
the come up. Metal Album of the Year, really?
That category is usually awful. Like, they're not saying metal is awful, but their picks are quite abysmal.
I'll tell you who's going to win that, though.
Who?
Mastodon will win the Metal Album.
Maybe, but I still think the Grammy voters are way too old to figure out who that
Mastodon
is.
Mastodon won.
You know what? I might be fucking my way out of $5. The way the Grammys works is October to October, usually mid-October. If this is part of 2011 Grammys...
Right, it may not even count.
It might be like a year and a half. That's how...
That will hurt
Metallica.
I don't know. That might work in your favor, because it also really depends on how well this thing ages. I don't know. Maybe a year
and another. I think this might have some weird cult following.
I think it will, too. I think there are going to be people that really think it's the worst record in existence, and there are going to be those fringe people. And I don't mean I mean fringe that literally... like kind of like Lou Reed's Metal Machine music album.
Yes, exactly.
Where, like...
What if that's the tour? They just play Metal Machine music, this album, and then like and then Death Magnetic from Metallica.
Dude, that would
no Saint Anger, because that's actually really bad.
Like, no, here's the thing: if they did a Lou Reed Metallica tour where Lou Reed came out, did Metal Machine music, and then did this album, that I would go to that in a second.
Yeah, that'd actually be good.
That would be pretty phenomenal. But my point is, I could see this album being that polarizing.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where it's you either really, 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 really dislike it and don't understand it. There's those people in the middle that might be, like, making fun of it just because it's ironic. But then there's those people that are like, no, man, you have to understand, like, this is new.
I'm going to play one more part before we start talking.
Yeah, we got to
get to the James Hetfield
part. Oh, yeah.
So keep talking while I pull that up, sir.
So he's playing out the James Hetfield part, which this is probably the only thing that keeps me from saying it's actually brilliant.
Yeah. I don't even know when it comes in because it's hard to read his poetry, but it'll be here sooner or later if you're a listener. Would you buy this?
Yeah, I think, you know, I want to hear another song.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in The Verge.
When you DJ, would you play this just to see what happens?
Yeah.
Alright, we should do a collaboration night at, like, Mars Cafe or something. Just you and me trying to just gauge reactions of songs that we love and everyone else hates.
Or just play this album from start to finish and, like, just
stand there.
Just do, like, what?
Let's do that, too.
I could...
I think it is. Oh, I'm sorry. Apologies. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know if this could be, like, my number one... It's not going to be my number one album of the year. But I could say this could be in my top 10.
Album or song?
Once I hear the... I'll do, like, songs.
Let's close this little snippet of the show with my thus far favorite song of the year, which I think you've heard most people hate. But let's just enjoy James Hetfield coming up sooner or later.
Yo.
Alright, so that's the James part.
I will agree with you.
For Metallica, pretty good. For Art and Lou Reed, pretty bad.
You know, I don't know, though, because I would argue that this might be one of Lou Reed's stronger points in the past 10 years.
Is there something real? Am I a fool? Is this how you feel? Are you playing cool?
All right, everybody, that is the show. I want to thank Nathan, and I want to thank Sean. There's some guys outside of my window right now doing construction, and some guy just referred to the next few weeks as Thanksgiving time, so I have to go and ask him what that means. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to be in New York City all week this week. We're going to be doing shows October 19th through the 22nd. Come on out, say hello. All those shows are at the website, youmadethemeverybody.com. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful night.
Follow us on Twitter at YMTE. Friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/youmethemeverybody. And for details on Monday and Tuesday nights at the Hungry Brain, go to youmethemeverybody.com.